Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, everyone. So today we would like to talk about the ruling of the German Constitutional Court that has declared a repurposing of the pandemic relief fund by the German government as unconstitutional. Together with the ruling, the Constitutional Court made a number of clarifications about how the debt brake has to be interpreted. And these clarifications have important implications for fiscal policy in Germany, because they apply not only to the particular fund that was litigated in court, but also to even larger funds that now have to be shut down as a result of the ruling, because they equally violate the debt brake. We talk about the court ruling and its implications for fiscal policy in Germany today with Lars Feld, who is professor of economics at the University of Freiburg. Lars was for many years a member of the German Council of Economic Experts and is currently a personal advisor to the German Finance Minister Christian Lindner. So welcome to the podcast, Lars. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, Dirk. Hi, Klaus, and to all our listeners. Thank you very much for the invitation to discuss this issue with you.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic, I understand. So the German Constitutional Court has objected to a number of features that were part of a recent financing measures taken by the government, arguing they violate the debt brake. So the debt brake is a constitutional requirement in Germany that limits the cyclically adjusted deficit to minus 0.35% of GDP each year. Deviations from these rules are possible in case of an emergency, but the court ruled that the way the government used the emergency clauses led to a misappropriation of funds. Perhaps you can briefly summarize, Lars, for our listeners, what was wrong with how the German government acted?
Well, actually, central problem of this transaction was that the government took 60 billion credit allowances from 1921 and transferred it to a fund, which was then named the Climate and Transformation Fund, that could use these credit allowances from 2022 onwards. The accounting of these allowances was made in 2021 for the debt brake. And because of the use of the emergency clause, the government could have a higher indebtedness in 2021. But so when you think about our normal accounting standards that we have in our macroeconomy, this would mean that in every year in which such credit allowances are used and additional bonds are issued in the markets, this should be counted in the year that it actually occurs. And the government wanted to account it in 2021 only and not in the years it actually occurs. And this is what the Constitutional Court says is unconstitutional. Because what you do then is you do not really issue bonds or something like this. You have credit allowances and you save them for later years in order to have an additional budgetary leeway, and this is not allowed. There were other things, for example, another reason why the court said this is unconstitutional was that the explanation of the government why it needs these funds and why this is actually helping to overcome an emergency situation, that these explanations were insufficient. And finally, it also said, you cannot have such a transaction in the beginning of 2022 for 2021. So this is not feasible too. But the main reason was this kind of allocation of accounting of the credit allowances.
So the government seemed generally surprised by the decision, which in hindsight at least is also surprising, given that there had been already a similar case made in the state of Hesse some time ago, and there the court of that state already ruled against this kind of shifting of money across time. And the ruling now of the Federal Constitution Court more or less cites that or replicates that decision. So why was everyone, or at least in the government, everyone surprised? Was it wishful thinking on the side of the government? Or, well, you already made it clear, but it would be interesting to hear. Nevertheless, is there some room for interpretation of the debt break as it was intended to be?
Yeah, well, of course, you could say the ruling of the Hessian Constitutional Court was already available in October 2021. So the government could have said, no, this will not work. But on the other hand, there was also a ruling by the Constitutional Court of Rhineland-Palatinate that goes in a different direction. And so what you usually observe when you look at the history of the Federal Constitutional Court, that sometimes it is taking up arguments by constitutional courts of the one or the other land in Germany, but otherwise it makes its own decision without taking this that much into account. So therefore, the Hessian case as such was not really or did not necessarily have had to induce the government to abstain from its ideas to come up with this kind of transaction. And the actual surprise was not that there was the decision to say that this is unconstitutional, this verdict of the Constitutional Court. I would say there was a 50-50 chance to go through or not. But the main surprise was that they said, well, this is also this needs to be applied backwards until 2021, or even until 2016, if we look carefully what the government did, because it also changed all these accounting rules from 2016 onwards. So other funds are also affected. Yeah, and therefore, this surprised the government pretty much, because then it had to change many, many more special funds and also look at its otherwise usual accounting practice in the government sector. So, for example, transferring credit allowances during the migration crisis from one year to the other was also done by the previous government, even under Schäuble. And then everybody says, well, this is normal practice in our fiscal system. And well, this now has to change.
Right. So let's look a little bit ahead. And somehow the German government will have to deal with the ruling. And it seems the way forward is now that they will call an exception clause to be applied in the current fiscal year 2023 to heal, so to speak, the 2023 budget. It's not much that can be done about prior budgets, I suppose. But then going forward to 2024 and 2025, it seems quite unlikely that a similar exception clause will be possible again. And the result of this, there will be a budget shortfall in these coming years, at least under the spending plans that were envisaged prior to the ruling. So now, do we have a rough sense of the magnitude of these shortfalls for the next 2 years, say 2024 and 2025?
Well, I can inform about a rough idea, although the exact number is not yet calculated. But the estimate that is around, and Christian Lindner said this last week, Friday afternoon, in an interview in Deutschlandfunk, it's somewhere between 10 and 20 billion euros. He says there's a one in the beginning of this number. So whether it's 19 or 19 something or 17 or 14, we will see. But this is the actual shortfall that we currently have, and it needs to be coped with. And as you correctly say,
so that's for, just to understand, that's for 2024.
That's for 2024, yes. Only 2024.
Okay.
Well, in the upcoming years, 2025 onwards, there will be additional requirements. Yeah. But you are perfectly right by saying that the emergency clause could be used again for 2023, just because the legal argument would be that given the new accounting rules, the government would have announced an emergency for 2023 in the end of 2022. because of all these energy price caps it's introduced. And well, it thought it is not necessary because it thought that its accounting practice would survive. Well, it did not survive, and so it has to change now, and this is feasible. Yeah, but in 2024, I don't see any emergency case to come up. So, for example, economic growth is a meager. It's well, we are, so to speak, in a stagnation environment, and if the additional budgetary effects next year will dampen economic growth further, this would mean that we are at, say, 0.5, 0.7% at best in economic growth next year. But this is not saying that there is really an emergency where we have a big economic crisis like we had during the financial crisis or during Corona. So I don't see that this is coming up. We don't have any idea of a natural disaster coming up next year. There are some people arguing that the Ukraine war would be a possibility to announce an emergency. Well, but the Ukraine war started in 2022. So this is 2 years on, and we had other reasons for emergency cases before. So this is not allowing us to announce the emergency case in 2024.
So how do you think these budget shortfalls will be covered? Will it be expenditure reduction? Will it be tax increases, a combination of both? And where would you see room for spending cuts?
Well, the Free Democrats have the clear announcement on the basis of the coalition treaty that there are not going to be tax increases. And this would mean that there should be spending cuts. Well, given, say, some figure between 11 and 19 billion euros, this is not easy to accomplish, I should say, because from one year to the other, some of the budgetary, some of the spending in the budget is not really flexible. Yeah? Think about the huge amount of spending that is made for the pension funds, which is can only be changed if there is an overall pension reform, and this is not easily feasible. Yeah? So still, on the other hand, still many spending increases since 2011 can be counted. And therefore, there is still a sufficient amount of money which is which could be flexibly changed. But I would also argue that the avoidance of tax increases does not mean that we cannot think about tax subsidies. So, for example, we have this split tax rate in case of the value-added tax. And many of these reduced tax rates of 7% are simply subsidies to particular parts of the economy. And so one of it will increase anyway next year. And we have other possibilities in the budget to change this. And in addition, you have further tax loopholes that could be closed. And therefore, I would, well, I'm not a member of the Free Democratic Party, but I would argue that they should prepare everyone in the general public that, eliminating or cutting tax subsidies is not a tax increase overall.
And what about spending cuts in terms of the project that were the money was earmarked for? I mean, you alluded to Social Security spending, our pensions and all that. It's very difficult. But what about these outright other projects? Can we not just invest the money there?
Well, of course, we could say, let's have a look at the projects that should be realized from 2024 onwards that are allocated to this climate and transformation fund. When you look at the different projects that should be financed by the climate and transformation fund, you realize that in the proper sense of government investment projects, there is only the 5.5 billion euros that should go to Deutsche Bahn in order to renovate its railway network. Yeah, but otherwise, it's only subsidies. 10 billion for Intel, for example. Yeah, which is a problematic kind of subsidy anyway. And so if you cut these 10 billion, there is a large part of the of the budgetary adjustment would be made. And in that regard, many things could be done. But I think when you think about it politically, the idea should be that each of the government parties should put something into the basket and say, I don't insist to have this additional project financed in the next couple of years. And then we wait the next elections and perhaps we can realize something of this later. And in that sense, the Greens could put subsidies for climate change and industrial policy into the basket. Social Democrats could say we are willing to make adjustments in the social budget, and the Free Democrats could say, let's have a look at tax subsidies.
Right. Let's now step back a little bit from the actual ruling and the implications and talk more broadly about why it makes sense to have debt breaks. There has, of course, been a large discussion started following the ruling, various people arguing for changes in the debt breaks, even though there seems to be no political majority because it would need a constitutional change. And that seems not to be on the horizon, with the Christian Democrats opposing any change. So in your view, why is it necessary to limit at all the room for fiscal maneuvers and have such a debt break? Why is that useful?
I think in general, fiscal rules are useful because we have a deficit bias of policymakers in general. Yeah, that's the main problem. The deficit bias occurs because of political economics and because of time inconsistency on the other end. Of course, for time inconsistency, political economics also plays a role, but I think it's natural in human decision making that there is individual time inconsistency anyway. So when you are a smoker and you want to stop smoking, it's always difficult to do it at a certain point in time. Then you postpone the decision any further. So this is nothing else than human. But in the case of politics, this is meaning whenever there is a possibility to consolidate the budget in order to ensure that your debt to GDP ratio is not increasing further and is also not increasing particularly in good times, then there are many, many arguments why the additional projects that you have in mind should be financed. And this is what we usually observe. There is this general problem with elections. So when an election looms, then the tendency of politicians to have additional spending right in front of the election in order to ensure its re-election is well documented in the literature. And what we have in general is that different groups usually want to access this budget as a kind of common resource. And this leads to an overuse of this resource in the sense of a common good. Yeah. So you have the idea of the fiscal commons in that regard. So these are three arguments I would make: time inconsistency, the fiscal commons problems, and the effect of elections on budgetary policies. And therefore, the restrictions imposed by fiscal rules help governments to overcome these problems. Or as one of the inventors of the Swiss debt break, which is a kind of role model for the German debt break, of the Swiss debt break said, it is a kind of coalition between voters on the one side and the finance minister on the other side, against parliament, against all these different groups, and in particular also against all the different spending ministries in the cabinet.
So suppose we all agree on the need to impose limits on fiscal deficits. So given this, one still would need to define which limits should be imposed. So in the German case, we already alluded to that. This is implemented by limiting the cyclically adjusted deficit to 0.35% of GDP. Where does that number come from? And do you think it's still fit for purpose? I'm asking because one implication of this number is that the debt to GDP ratio will gradually decline and reach zero eventually under this rule, provided at least there's some nominal growth in Germany. And say from a financial market point of view, the amount of safe assets and German government debt obviously is one would shrink further, and that would create its very own problems.
Yeah, well, the 0.35% came up because the original idea to have 0.5 and divide it between the federal level and the lender level, the state level, did not fly. Yeah, so the government proposed to have 0.35% for the federal level and 0.15% for the lender. And then during the negotiations in 2008-2009, the lender said, we don't want it. It's better to have a structural zero. Yeah, and therefore we come up with this surprising figure of 0.35. 0.5% is somehow related to what we have at the European Union level. And when you think about the medium-term objective under the Stability and Growth Pact, there the 0.5% is already one of the elements that is included there. And the government wanted to use this for its own debt break in Germany. And as I said, the lender simply abstained from the 0.15. What you should also think about in this regard is it is cyclically adjusted. So we have a structural balance that we look at. This is meaning during downturns, when there is an output gap, additional government indebtedness is possible. And also during an emergency case, as we had it quite often in recent times, during the financial crisis, but then a bit more than 10 years later during the COVID crisis as well, it allows you for additional indebtedness. And this is meaning I can understand that in simulations, you will come up with a debt to GDP ratio that is asymptotically coming closer to zero with this 0.35% structural deficit that is allowed. But in practice, what we actually observe is that it's going to be difficult to be to come that close to 0%. So I would not fear that the safe assets that the German government is producing will become too small in number. I think that it will be sufficient to serve the purposes of financial markets.
And why do you think that so few countries have adapted a similar strict rule then?
Well, on the one side, we have the Stability and Growth Pact in Europe, also with the additional purpose to somehow ensure that there's not a fiscal dominance of monetary policy. This is the additional goal that we have, the additional objective that we have in the European Monetary Union. Although the Stability and Growth Pact is not as restrictive as the debt brake in Germany is, it is also not as credible as the German debt brake is, but still there are restrictions on other governments in Europe as well. In the US, the restrictions are not strong. When you think about their debt ceiling, which is lifted again and again when it's touched, you see that this kind of debt restriction does not work pretty well. We have the case of Switzerland that I already alluded to, which is more restrictive. It has a structural balance. It is not allowed, the federal government is not allowed to have a higher structural deficit than 0%. So there is more restriction in the Swiss case. When we think about the construction that we have in Europe with this European Monetary Union on the one side and the fiscal policy decentralized at the member state level, and you compare this with the US, we must also acknowledge that in the US, the US states have very strict balanced budget rules and are not allowed to incur much debt at this state level. And this is something we should keep in mind as well when we think about the debt brake in Germany.
Right. So now some have argued recently that the new and stricter interpretation of the debt brake that came with the Constitutional Court ruling makes it difficult to achieve the green transition because that requires a lot of public investment. So the EU Commission has estimated that about 3% of GDP need to be invested every year to reach the 2030 climate targets. That's of course public and private investment amounts to around 520 billion euros at the EU level. So do you agree with the view that the green transition requires higher public investment and that this higher public investment is in conflict with the debt brake?
I don't think that the higher investment properly defined is really in conflict with the debt brake. When we think about infrastructure investment for green transition, so for example, an improvement in the railway system or the power networks, the power grids that we need, also with respect to a more digitized network, I think this can be financed under the restrictions that we have with the debt brake. It will not be impossible to do this. Of course, then you have to put clear priorities on these investment spendings instead of further increasing transfers. You know? But when we look more closely what the European Commission on the one hand, many member countries, including Germany on the other hand, do, they argue that this is investment when they pay subsidies. They pay subsidies to a large extent, and the argument is we need to pay these subsidies in order to ensure that private investment is coming up. I would argue let's increase carbon pricing, and then there is a clear incentive for firms to change their capital stock and come up with more climate-friendly production methods. So the additional subsidies that everyone thinks is necessary is something that is properly restricted by the debt brake, and it's good that we have this kind of restriction.
So do I get it right? You prefer to rather induce the change by private investment incentivized by imposing appropriate carbon taxes rather than using subsidy-based finance, which has to become somewhat more in fashion recently?
Well, this is somehow looking at climate policy in a way that this transformation to a climate neutral economy will not impose any burden, neither on firms nor on consumers and private households. And I think that is an illusion. And trying to feed this illusion by additional subsidies paid to everyone is not up to the task, because we need to ensure that carbon emissions are reduced to the extent that we actually need it. And this is only done by carbon pricing. Of course, you need to have some kind of social transfers in order to help the poorer households in the different countries in order to be able to stomach this additional carbon prices, But otherwise, there is not much more spending needed. What you gain is additional revenue instead of additional spending.
Just to follow up on that, so you mean there should be no real room to incentivize new greener technologies? Because there's this line of arguments from Tarun Acemoglu, for example, that carbon prices alone may just reduce the efficiency of fossil fuels, but then the new renewable energy technologies, which need some ramp up investments, may not be able to catch up with that. But you wouldn't subscribe to that view as being an issue.
I would not fully subscribe to that. I'm pragmatic. So I would say to some extent, it will not be avoidable to have some subsidies paid out to particular firms. Think about the steel industry, for example, which has a huge political influence also. So I can understand that something is paid. But the idea to have these kind of subsidies as the main instrument in order to achieve this transition towards climate neutrality, I think this is mistaken, and we should change towards carbon pricing to a larger extent. Regarding Tarun Acemoglu's argument, well, when you think of it in the case of infant industry idea, yeah, so you want to have renewable technologies and they should have an upfront subsidy in order to ensure that this technology is coming up and so on. Well, we are subsidizing these kind of technologies for many, many years. It's not that we don't have done this in the past. We did it for quite a long time, and we continue to do it. And therefore, I don't see that there is an additional argument to have additional spending in that regard. Of course, we can think about new technologies coming up, but given that we already have a kind of stock of technologies for renewable energy, this could improve with the right incentives that come from carbon pricing.
Staying with climate change and all that, do you think it would be a good idea to put it into the constitution, the goal of transforming the economy towards one with a net zero level of greenhouse gas emissions? So in the end, the commitment problems you alluded to earlier, that justifying having debt break, that to some extent equally apply to achieving the transition towards a net zero economy. What's your view here?
Well, I don't think that we need to have a change in the constitution because we have two different rulings of the Federal Constitutional Court. One of it is saying that the climate goals should be taken more seriously and that a government should start right in time to push towards this transition to climate neutrality. This is one ruling from 2021. And now you have this ruling regarding the debt brake, and it's saying, well, we cannot, in fact, it is saying we cannot impose additional burden to future generations. And both rulings, they are not contradictory. They really are complementary. And this is something that we should keep in mind as well. What the Constitutional Court is saying, the current generation of voters and governments is not allowed to put such a high burden on future generations, and you should cope with it in a proper way in order to do the right, in order to have the right decisions already today.
There's also an international dimension to all that we discussed. So fiscal policy is increasingly used around the globe to deal with the green transition, partly also taking the form of industrial policy that seeks to support certain sectors of the economy. I guess the US Inflation Reduction Act is a case in point here. So if other countries use these tools while Germany is constrained to do so by the debt brake, is that a competitive disadvantage, or should this perhaps even be an advantage in the longer run because the money might be wasted? What's your take on that?
Well, on the one side, the money might be wasted, but when you think about this comparison with the US, it's interesting that Europe, which has subsidized its renewables for quite a long time, wants to increase the subsidies further given the Inflation Reduction Act, whereas the US only recently has started to come up with these subsidies in the sense of a tax credit in the Inflation Reduction Act, whereas the US has had, during many years, managed to have better investment conditions overall. Think about the tax burden in the US, which is lower than in many European countries, in particular in Germany. Think about the regulatory intensity, which is much, much lower in the US than somewhere else in Europe. And therefore, the idea that I would have if I compare with the US would be, well, we have already subsidized to quite a large extent. Now the US do this as well. Now let's follow the US and come up with better conditions overall for investment, which is meaning a tax reform that cuts taxes on the one side and a regulatory reforms, a deregulation on the other side.
Okay, I'm trying a little brief summary. So what went wrong? It was the money being transferred over time. That is something the court made pretty clear is not possible. And the surprise on the side of the government here was not so much that this was eventually viewed as a problematic, but rather how strict the court came down on the government and said that even retroactively, you shouldn't do that. So that was what created the fiscal hole here, and that was the surprise, not necessarily the message, if you will, or the spirit of the ruling. How big is the budget shortfall? A bit below 20 billion, you say, in 2024, 2023. So this year there will be a new emergency clause, and you think that can be justified given that the government would have probably declared an emergency if it had known that the money from the past would not be available anymore. How should that be covered? You think that all the parties in the government should somewhat contribute, that they should be flexible here, but spending cuts are probably the way to go here, including subsidies, which is a kind of reverse tax. Why did that break? You stressed that, well, there's a deficit bias, there's a lot of evidence for that, there's time inconsistency and the fiscal common problems and all that justifies having fiscal rule. Then so why the -0.35? There's some historical reasons why it is, but also you said it sounds more severe or more strict in theory than it will turn out in practice. So that would then argue for a lower target here, given that in the end there will always be some slippage. How to deal with the green transition? You think important to be strict or to be clear what's infrastructure investment here? And that in fact a lot of the funding here has been simply subsidies but not investment. Carbon pricing should be clearly part of the solution here. Climate change in the constitution, there's actually no need to change the constitution, you say, because the constitution court already had in the past made clear that addressing climate change is something the government needs to do, and those two rulings somewhat interlinked. And then finally, the international dimension. Europe has been already subsidizing a lot of these green technologies for some time with effort, or if you will, the result not necessarily that great. Other dimensions here are maybe more important, so tax reform or supply side reforms could help overcome any potential disadvantage from other countries using industrial policy aggressively. Was that a fair summary?
Yes, a very fair summary. Thank you.
Well, we have to thank for your time and for your insights. And I could imagine that being an advisor to the German Finance Minister will remain very interesting for the weeks to come.
I have learned already quite a lot since the beginning of 2022. If this continues, it's been worth it. Thank you very much.